The following presentation was recorded at the 2010 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
All right. Good morning. I feel something like a rarity in my community. I think I'm the only principal in my district, but I just love being together with all this group of principals. There's actually other people that do this. It's good to know. And I'm just tickled to see all these faces that I recognize. And lots of you have much more experience than I do. And there's quite a collection of wisdom here, I'm sure. The number one focus here today is going to be the needs that you brought with you. We definitely want to take time for that. You traveled all this way. You have your questions. Feel free to share them. I'm sure somewhere in this pool of people we can find some good answers. But we have this title here, Oversight Responsibility of Principals. And very broad title, which means that we can go about any direction we want, really. That's the one nice thing about broad titles. The unhandy thing about broad titles is that you may not know exactly what the real agenda is. But we have a little agenda that was given, and we'll try to be true to that here to start with. Before we go further, let's pray a little bit here. Thank you, Father, for blessing our plans today thus far, giving us safety and giving us a beautiful day. And thank you that spring is on the way, and that it is a sign of new life, and that it invigorates our classrooms. And thank you for this interest that is shown here in this little time. I pray that you will bless our time together and give us your spirit, give us your direction, and may we go here inspired to serve you in fullness and invigorated to be a blessing in our communities. Be with us now, we pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Somewhat the direction is for us here today is to try to be as practical to the day in and day out things, the fluid, the oil that makes this thing really go smoothly. Day in and day out affairs. I divided up on your little brief outline into two major categories, basic school management, and then our work with teachers. And just a few thoughts here to begin with to put our oversight responsibilities into perspective. Now, you're all very familiar with where oversight is used in the New Testament, I'm sure, 1 Peter 5:3. And in that's a passage we usually think about when we think about bishops. But those three commands and those three warnings in that little set of verses apply as much to administrators as they do to bishops. And the first of those commands is feed. And feed is a very appropriate word there because anything you feed grows, and that has got to be one of a teacher's favorite word, right? It's growth. I mean, we really want growth. We like progress. We like to be going somewhere. And that is one positive command. The other one then, of course, is to take the oversight. Take it. Seize it like it's the greatest thing that ever happened to you. And we only have this hour to spend together, and that's not near enough time because there's so many things to discuss, and we're really excited about it. And we really enjoy our job, and we take it willingly. We want to do it. Can't wait to do it. The third command, then, is to set, the Bible says, ensample. We would say example. And our whole life is on display. Everything we do is on display. And calls for a tall order on our part. And then there are three warnings there. And the first one is, take the oversight thereof, not by constraint. No one's here by constraint, right? I mean, you really want to do this. Don't you dare fall into the category where you have to be forced to do this work. It's the work of God. It's a great privilege to be involved in it. And the other one, of course, is not for filthy lucre, which is obviously not a problem here. But maybe it is. I don't know. And the third warning is not to be lords over God's heritage. You know, this kind of reminds me of how I feel sometimes as a principal. I don't know if you all can relate to the metaphor we usually use to describe this work is the juggler. You know, he's got 6, 7, 8 balls in the air and another 5 around his feet that already fell somewhere. And don't you dare stop to pick up one of those balls or the sky will rain down. Be a disaster. Don't know if you've ever felt like that or not. But when I get to feeling like a juggler, I have to remind myself maybe I got the perspective all wrong, because a juggler is a showman. He's on the stage. He's got himself on display. And that's not the proper procedure. It's not the proper way. Maybe it's time for us to get off the stage if we feel like a juggler and go read 2 Corinthians 4 again. I don't know. I suppose you all have a defining passage in your administrative work that you go to time after time after time. I have one of those. It's 2 Corinthians 4. If you haven't thought about that passage lately, read it again. It puts it all into perspective. And, of course, the main verse that I think about that has become one of my favorite verses in the Bible is verse 7. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. And I don't have to elaborate on that a lot, because our last topic, that was made very clear. And that's a powerful thought. When I think about my oversight responsibilities, I simply cannot divorce it from the team idea. I like to think about our school as the great clipper ships that used to sail the seas, mighty ships right before the steamboat came out. All those sails, and they cut through the water faster than any boat to date, way back then. And the team of men that had to man that operation and work together and man your post, you know the saying, and the helmsman trying to oversee, steer, and the captain overseeing the operation. And when I think about that, that's a good sign of our school, or what I want for our school, us working together. You know, one of the greatest hallmarks of every leader is that he can delegate responsibility. He's a team player. And maybe we'll talk about that some more here as we go. The one frustrating thing about thinking about a clipper ship is that they were very fast in their progress, and many times in our schools we have to be content with very slow progress. But I've learned to love slow progress, and I'll tell you why. I don't think it's an excuse for being not getting so far down the trail. But I've learned to love slow progress because I come from a large Mennonite community. And within that large, and this is probably true of all large Mennonite communities, there's another 3 or 4 subcultures down there vying for attention. And when you have that, all of those different ideas floating around in your school and pushing and pulling, it's sometimes hard to make all that work. And so I found that slow progress, if we can make slow progress is more readily accepted. It's more readily accepted, and it's far more permanent. And so I love slow progress because of that. Sometimes I almost feel guilty, because that's kind of the way Satan works. But I don't like to think of it that way, because in reality, that is kind of the way the Holy Spirit deals with us sometimes. He doesn't throw the whole bit at us at first, start of our Christian life. He takes us one little step at a time. And if we're doing our work for the Lord, the slow progress will take us where we want to go. Well, the committee member that I talked to, his plea was very practical logistics, and so I have a few points here, and you can maybe just about guess what goes in the blanks, maybe. And it is common sense, really. When I thought about this, I'm like, this is so simple. There's nothing complicated about this at all. But I just challenge you to go home and look at your school and just think about that again. And if everything is going if you go down through here and you see, well, we're doing all that, well, then thank the Lord. You're really far down the road. Your school is really where it needs to be. And I know that probably one of these you'll think about, well, that's my weakness. That's where I just struggle away. And I have one of those. In fact, every man, did y'all ever read William Barton's book on the Sapphic Sage and those parables of a country parson? I don't know if you ever read that book, but he likes to compare a lot of things to donuts. It's fascinating how many different things he compares to donuts. But one of the things he compares to donuts is men. Every man has a hole. Every man has a hole. There's two reasons, I guess. Well, there's probably more reasons why every man has a hole. But two reasons that I think about when I think about my weakness. There's a reason that there's that hole there, and that's because I need to learn something about the grace of God. And I need to learn how to work with others. Because when everyone gets together and meshes together, all the holes disappear. And so that makes kind of a neat analogy. So if you find your weakness, maybe we can spend some time thinking about how to minimize that weakness. Now, I'll go over these and be somewhat general, and then I'm going to open it up for discussion. We can be more specific. And so you have your questions ready or things that I'm missing. This time of the year, this is a good time to have these workshops in March. We're always humble this time of the year, right? Okay. First point, the first word there is a place for everything. Place for everything. And I see some of my friends sitting here, and I know some of you are very good at this. I should probably sit down and give the floor to Gary here. If you ever get a chance to go to Muddy Creek, check his room out sometime. He's got that together. But our school building is 100 years old. This year, we should have some kind of celebration. Now, we haven't been around for 100 years, but the school building has been. And those old buildings don't have closets. Any closet in that building had to be built. And there are three closets that I am continually frustrated with. The science closet and the cleaning closet. How ironic is that? Cleaning closet, and the resource closet. Everybody has a resource closet, right? That's the one where you open it and all the bulletin board border sets come raining down and sneaking around you that the lady teachers like to collect. Anyway, those were a frustration to me for a couple of years until I went and visited another preacher. I mean, not a preacher, a principal, one of my fellow principals, and I used to go around talking to principals because no one really ever gave me much of a job description. And I wanted to know what I was supposed to do. And he threw a whole pack of papers at me of things that he does and legislates and the way he works things. And one of those papers was a neat little sheet, and I'm sure all of you do this. It was just something that simple as it was, I just didn't catch on to right away. It was a simple little paper that had a list of all teachers. And he gave each one of those teachers something to own. And it just hit me. That's why our three closets are such a wreck. No one owns them. They own their desk. And they own their classroom. As soon as they walk out the classroom door, then that's someone else's baby. And so I learned something there. And now yeah, that was summertime. The next year we sat down and we delegated each responsibility, each closet to somebody. And now they're in better shape. They're not perfect, especially the one that I'm responsible for right now. But they're not better than they used to be. Place for everything. And you know, I am an orderly school. And things where they need to be. creates an inviting atmosphere that makes people feel at home. It draws them in. And I hope if you visit my school that you feel that. That's what we want. And it's amazing how quickly we get used to just clutter. It's amazing how fast that happens. So maybe we need to think about that some more. I also believe that it's very crucial to developing school morale, boosting school morale, because we are trying to teach our children. There's a book I'm reading now. It's an old book. It is more than 100 years old. Did you ever read this, School Management, by Emerson White? I think it's his name, Emerson E. White. And it is old. It's from the old school style. And I haven't read it thoroughly enough yet to know which bones to pitch out. But incredible book. I'm pretty excited about it. It's probably going to be one that I give the teachers to peruse through one of these days. And he talks about the seven school disciplines that all children should be trained in. Not moral disciplines as much as will training disciplines, he calls them. And one of them is neatness and orderliness. And simple. It's not hard to understand. It's just that we get so used to a lower standard. All right. Next point. Go through here so we have some time for discussion. Next point is a time for everything. And this one's my great weakness. I am a ridiculous forgetter. And how can I minimize that? I suppose the first thing is just to admit that it's a weakness. That's where we start. And there's nothing like a good, heavy responsibility to get that firmly fixed in your mind. My life has become extremely structured and regimented and scheduled. Some people would say you're being legalistic. But the more I teach and the more I try to administrate, the more I depend on that. And it is actually, although some people might look at it as a very regimented, strict life, it's the only way I manage to get things running smoothly. And it's the only way I manage to minimize my weakness. And really, it's the only way that I end up actually resting about it. And my planner has become one of my close friends. And in that planner goes everything. Everything I can think of. Events and reminders. And I even have a little, every so often I put a note to reread my goals for the year. Because if I didn't put that little note to go get your list of goals out, if I didn't have that there, I would never look at it again. That time would never come if I didn't write it down and make a time for it. And if I didn't put in there that it's time to plan a field trip, I would all of a sudden be May trying to get a field trip together. Especially if you ever try to plan one to CAM or something, that takes about a year to plan. Staff meetings, I don't know how often they would happen if I just expected that I'll remember to make it happen. And the most effective way that I've found to cover my back on this kind of thing is to sit down with all the teachers, with their planners. I don't make copies of the plan for them. Otherwise, they'll just stick it in a drawer and forget about it. But everybody looks at their planner every day. So we get our planners all out, we sit down, and we get everyone on the same page so that when I fail, they can cover my back a little bit. I suppose there's a lot of things we could say there. Let me just go to the last one yet. And that is a procedure for everything. And maybe you have a question about that. I mean, really? A procedure for everything? Well, maybe not. It made a nice little three-point outline. But I have had to learn something about the importance of procedures over the years. And I'll tell you why. 10 years ago, our community had a terrible church split. And it wiped out half the school. And there was 14 students in our school in the year 2000. 14 students. And everyone got discouraged, and everyone lost their vision, and they didn't think there's any future around here anymore. And the school was going to be years growing again. And they just wondered if it would ever grow again. And the lady teacher that was there, she was very wise. She has a real heart for teachers, for students. And she just took, and the students were feeling it too, right? They lost their friends. She took that little group of students, it's all grades, and just kind of turned it into one big family atmosphere and did very well with that. Almost like a homeschool, maybe. That's how she worked it, and it worked. But there was a PTA meeting where we invited a principal down. He told the parents, he said, this school is going to grow again. But I don't think anyone believed him. But he tried. Anyway, it did start growing, and it really grew. And today we have 70 students. And we almost didn't catch on in time. When I first came in 2004, the students would come to school and put their stuff on the shelf and run outside to play. And played around and did all kinds of things for the whatever. And you could say, come on, Mom, we got to get to school so we can play. And 14, 20 students, maybe not such a big deal. But then the school started growing. And you can imagine what kind of, and I can't imagine today if we still had that procedure, 70 students out ripping around, what that would be like. But one day we had to sit down and say, there's going to be a procedure for how we do, I'm just giving the example of morning arrival. There's going to be a procedure for this. They're going to come in, and they're going to put their stuff on the shelf. They're going to go out and take a short restroom break and come in and stay in their room and sit in their desk and work on their Bible memory or their homework. Hopefully that's done. Or visit quietly and something like that. And say good morning to the teacher when they come in the door and all those that procedure. And I suppose that the first students that had to be subjected to that, I suppose they felt like the fences were going up. I suppose they felt like we were making a bunch of rules. And schools are supposed to just have a few rules, right? But I think it's how you present. There's not a student in my room. If I told them all to write down the rules in my classroom, none of them would put that morning arrival procedure as a rule. It's just the way we do it. And it has brought incredible order and security to our school. And I'm talking about school-wide procedures, too, and not just a classroom. But school-wide procedures. And the other thing I want to say about this procedures before I leave this point is this, that we spend a lot of time talking about discipline issues. It just seems like that's where we go in staff meetings or wherever. Discipline issues. What are we going to do about this person? What are we going to do about this issue? And yes, there are really some discipline issues that must be discussed. But there are two incredible cures to discipline issues that you read in just about every book on teaching. There's one example. It's in there. Two cures to discipline issues. Number one, inspiring teaching. And number two, proper procedures. And the thing that's interesting about that is that those two cures for discipline are proactive measures. They're not reactive measures. And that's why they're so effective. You catch it on the positive side. Not the now we have to clean up issues side. And that's why I've become a believer in procedure. With the proper training, procedures become routine. And the students don't even think about this list of rules. They don't even see it as rules. It shouldn't even be known as rules. If you ever read the book, First Days of School, I think they really kind of talk about the difference of rules and procedures. Well, let's open it up now for a little bit. I suppose there's some things I could have put there. I could have put another point there, I guess, a form for everything. Seems like some of us, and that's a good way to communicate. Having our forms and charts and things we send out to the parents, I didn't put that down as a point. But What are you thinking about? What are your questions? What should be brought to the floor here yet that I missed? Anything? Let's just have a little time here. Thank you for that. I doubt there's anyone here that has that totally together. In fact, since we don't know the future, and since God's made us the way he has, it'll probably always be something that we periodically struggle with. Do you schedule after school hours? Your regiment after school hours? I had a goal at the beginning of the year that I was going to take the first 15 minutes after 3 o'clock to read books. I mean, not the textbooks for teaching. Read other books for broadening my perspective. That one kind of disappeared. I don't know what happened to it over the months, but that one went by the way. I'm going to pick it up again in summertime. Little as possible for what, family? Good. I have often wished that I would. I'm such a late bloomer. I never started teaching until after I was married. And I wish I could have had 3 or 4 years in when I was single. I don't know what ailed me. I just didn't get into it before. I was asked many times, but couldn't get out of the family business. Anyway, but that is something that I don't do so well at. The learning curve has been quite steep, and I have a principal friend that tells me that I have got to quit doing schoolwork on Saturday. I'm going to burn out before my 10th year. I've just never taken him up on that yet. I still do schoolwork on Saturday. Don't know how I'd make it. There is a lot of helpful advice that I've gotten over the years about that. I've even been up front with my students about this, and now we're kind of shifting gears and getting into teacher perspective a little bit, but probably most of you teach. My first year, I tried desperately to get over everything and do everything. You just can't. Different experienced principals showed me that if I would just take one subject a year, just really try to do that one right. And the others, I don't know if you just have to give assignments. I guess you just have to give assignments. And my subject this year is world history. And literature is, some of you would be absolutely ashamed to sit in my literature class. Just the way it is. I'll make no apologies for it at this point. Now, maybe after next year, it'll be a different story. But it's just going to take a while to get there. This is only my 6th year. And when you're in high school and have that big cycle of all those different subjects, it just takes a long time. I don't know, maybe 30 years into it, I'll finally get it all done. But anyway, any other advice on that? Yeah, that's exactly right. The school board's over there trying to figure out how to pay their teachers all summer so that you can do that. I actually have that down here a little bit under teacher development, and that's an excellent point. Must they? I mean, I already mentioned the point that teachers are supposed to be inspiring. How can they ever be inspiring if they just have all this stuff to crunch? Can't do it. This will not happen.
Students just can't either.
No. In fact, I don't know, maybe some of you would disagree with it, but I've taken some of my first and second year teachers in the lower grades and just totally wiped out stuff. We've been sitting down together as a board and just chopping stuff just to make time and space and more creative energy. It's going to pay off in the long run, I'm pretty sure. Then all that regimented, getting it all done, now I covered it, idea. Well, ready to move on? I have spent the bulk of my oversight responsibilities on this next point. And lots of energy it takes for this one. And I'll tell you why, and that's because of our community culture, for one. I've taught this is year number six, and it's up to, I think I've taught with about 20 different teachers. And high teacher turnover is a reality for us. And another thing that's embedded into our community that we've got to change somehow. But besides me, the last male teacher from our community was about 1985, 6, 7, along there. Now, we've had some good men teachers since from other areas, and that's all good. But we have really struggled to keep good teachers there long term. And I am thankful for every spiritual young person that has come into our school and gave their 1 or 2 years. And I've worked with some very fine people, and I've learned there are some excellent young people out there. And that's well and good. But what can we do? And we've, in talking with different people in the area, it's kind of a vision of ours to well, it's going to be a community vision. I know that. And it has to involve a lot of people, ministry, board, and principal. And I suppose we've somewhat delegated this responsibility. The ministry is going to begin to try to somehow change the, I don't know, through preaching or something, some of the mentality in our community, the very business-oriented, materialistic mentality. And to work we've thought a lot in our communities about the role of a teacher, but maybe we need to think more about the calling of a teacher. And the board, their job is to try to find these qualified people and figure out how to train them. And my responsibility seems overwhelming sometimes, but my responsibility is to, I don't know, the phrase sell this job is not a good phrase, but to make it a respectable job for a principal, for a man to be a teacher and a principal in our community, which is 99% businessmen, maybe not quite that high percent, but very high. And then, of course, the other part is to take these young people that come with a willing spirit and almost no experience, many times none. And where are we going to go? And what are we going to do? And 1 year, I had 5 new teachers. And that's just about, so that's where all my energy went that year. Four were full-time. Actually, 2 of them had taught a couple months some before. And the one was a teacher's aide. And so we were talking about as a board, what are we going to do? This is going to take a lot of energy. And things could unravel really fast, and maybe some of them won't even work out. We've had teachers quit in the middle of the year already. So I told them that, you know, we started planning up. Okay, we're going to go to Faith Builders for a week, and we're going to go to Ebenezer for a week, and we're going to go to CLP for a week. Started planning them up, get it all crunched in there in the month of August. And then it just hit me one day that these places are great, and we go to them, we do, and I'm all for it. But almost like it is here today, those places have to be general. They can't be specific to our school need. And so I asked the board, I said, can I do my own Hewitt's Mennonite School Teachers Institute? Oh, wow, are you sure you can handle that? And this was in August, of course. Yeah, I said, I want to take a whole week, just have everyone here, and we'll just have institute here. And it was going to be a lot of preparation. It really was a lot of work. But I wanted to be able to fit all this stuff that they were hearing when they went to their teacher's institute, and bang, right here, us. And this is how we're going to do it. And these are our procedures, and this is our schedules, and this is what we don't do and do, and all of that. Anyway, it was I got my other co-teacher that's been around for longer than I have, and we planned this out. And I don't know if there's anyone here that's in that situation, but that was, I think, the Lord's leading. We had sessions on it. We spent 1 day. And of course, they're all new teachers, and they're very concerned about bulletin boards and room decoration and all that. When are we going to get all this done? And I don't know if they really like to take 3 or 4 of their hours and sit down around the table and talk about all this. But we did. After it was over, I'm sure they were, I know that they appreciated it. Spent one whole day talking about scheduling. Nothing but scheduling. If they brought up discipline issues, I said, no, not today. It's scheduling today. That's all we're going to talk about today. We're not going to stop until it's all smooth and running. I mean, as much as it can be in August. And the next day, procedures. We're not going to talk about anything else but procedures today. And then they had this assignment where they had to write out all their procedures within a couple months. I didn't make them do it before school started. They're new teachers. But I gave them lots of examples. And then the next day, we finally got to what they wanted to talk about, discipline. And another day, lesson preparation. And we talked about what really is an inspiring teacher. And another day, lesson presentation. And I made them get up front, and my co-teacher and I threw all the tricks at them, you know. It was kind of fun. And it helped to get them ready, because they prepared in a different way after that. And then we spent a day with testing, grading, and scoring. And that, the month of August. My first point here is prepare teachers in August. And like the brother said here a while ago, doing it before a time has just made things go much smoother. This year now, last year, a lot of those teachers returned. So maybe we're making the clipper ship might be speeding up a little bit. I don't know, but a lot of them returned. And so what are we going to do now? We still had Teachers Institute at our school. And instead, we went to the next step. And we thought about where in our curriculum are we weak and where can we improve? And we sat around and brainstormed about that. And we thought about school culture and morale boosters. And those kind of things, and had another terrific time together in August. One morale booster that we planned for February, and we just got done doing it, and it amazes me every year how that jacks up the morale. Took one day and switched the teachers all around. Call it Teacher Swap Day. I don't know if any of you ever tried that. I went down to third grade teacher came to my room and changed everything all around. Makes a lot of work. And we didn't tell the students what day. Just all of a sudden they came to school and I'm sitting in their teacher's desk. And wow, the third grade teacher was having all kinds of issues over there. She was really struggling. And I was worried that morning and praying, Lord, I was worried about it. But I didn't have so much as a glitch all day long. They were just into it and amazed. And they, little third graders, they laugh at everything you do. Everything you do is funny for some reason. And yeah, we had a good time. So we talk about this kind of things. And it is a lot of work for the teachers. In fact, they almost talked me out of it. One evening they were worried and nervous. And I'm glad I didn't back down. And we, maybe we should let that point. What time is it getting to be here? Yeah, we should move on. Build teaching skills through evaluation. So has been somewhat my job to evaluate the other teachers, and someone then needs to evaluate me. And two of my board members are in here today, so I'm being evaluated, and I'll have to make sure all this works now. Evaluation. You know, experience is important. When I first started teaching, I thought, boy, I just wish I had 10 years under my belt already. But experience is everything. Experience is very valuable, but how does Howard Hendricks say it? Evaluated experience. In fact, he has this little formula that he uses that always intrigued me. He says, any factor times zero equals zero. That always intrigues me. Think about this a little bit. Years times growth equals experience that impacts. And so, you know, I only have 5 years. But what if I gave a lot of time and people helped me to grow by 10 points? I have a growth factor. My impact is now 50. And then you could change this around for, you could say, 30 years in a classroom times 1 equals 30. Let them preach, you know? I mean, I've always been intrigued by that concept. And so that's where we're at. I mean, we are at the place where the teachers have only taught 2 years. But and we just had a teacher, because of health reasons, had to quit in December. And I worried about that. Boy, here I am. We just had a son born to our family, and that always makes a hectic time. And now a teacher has to quit. And who are we going to get? And what is that issue going to be? And but we found this girl with the most teachable spirit. And she doesn't have a lick of experience, but comes with an incredible teachable spirit. She just drinks it. I mean, whatever you say. And she's making it happen. She's growing by leaps and bounds. And it's answer to prayer. And so I have to find time in my school year as a principal to help these teachers grow, to sit in their classrooms and find ways that they can improve. Usually just little things. Oh, they never thought of that. And then people have to sit in my room and make sure that I'm getting this figured out, because I still have a long way to go myself. It's getting to be 11 o'clock. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll finish filling in the blanks here, and then maybe we'll go back and maybe we can touch up on some. The next point is free teachers from the curriculum guide. Maybe not the first year, but definitely the second year. They ought to give some serious thought to that, that does not become their lifelong crutch. And the word free is so important, because they just need to experience how alive their teaching can be if they just invest their own time into studying it instead of regurgitating the guide. And that's a fascinating point. The next one is hold regular staff meetings. And what do you do at your staff meetings besides eat? Maybe we could have some discussion on that. I feel like I need some help on good, effective staff meetings sometimes. The next point is listen to teachers anytime. And that can take away our time that we were talking about, lots of it. A couple years ago, I decided that if I want to win the confidence of my teachers, and so when they knock on my door, and some of those young girls are so timid, what can I do to draw them out? And I want them to come. And so I might be buried in 3 different textbooks and my computer, but I wheel around and I give them my eyes. And I don't look away from them. I just give them my eyes so they know that they have my 100% attention. And that has caused more knocks on my door than about anything else. But I'm getting what I want. They're coming and with their questions. And the next point, invite the teachers to your house. And either me or the chairman, we have all the teachers over and we have a good time. Some recreation together, some time when we're just relating outside of school. And the last one is provide your teachers with good books to read. And this is not an all-inclusive list. It's just a few points that I jotted down that I have found helpful. On the last point, good books to read, I begin to think about where in the curriculum we study what. And so the second, third grade teacher, she wants some books to read. What should she read? Well, I don't know. Maybe she should just get a whole bunch of books about animals and just really become thoroughly acquainted with all the animals, because in second, third grade, they're fascinated with animals. And she's got a book over there as tall as they are about animals, and it's about worn out. And maybe the fifth grade or sixth grade teacher should be doing an in-depth study of science experiments and hands-on science, those kind of things. We like to think about that, how we can grow. Not necessarily all about the art of teaching, although that's important, but what areas can we broaden out in? All right, let's open it up again. And maybe you have questions that don't even pertain to what we discussed. We could have talked about school culture. We could have talked about relating to parents and all. That's all part of our oversight responsibility. What else do you want to discuss here in these closing minutes? Did you ever read that book, First Days of School, and that example in there about that teacher that was so good at procedures and teaching everything that when he was sick, he didn't even show up, and his students just kept right on doing their thing? Every time I read that, I think, what were his students? Were they ants or something? I never understood that. But anyway, apparently it's true. And that's, you know, I've tried that a couple of times. There's been some mornings that I've told the students, look, I'm gonna be in and out. And here it's maybe a day where we're kind of starting over in some of the subjects where there's a lot of reading assignments, and so I cut them loose. I have left and come back, and I've been surprised. But now I don't have quite the size of classroom that you would have, which would make a difference. Anyway, I'll open that up. What's your feelings on that? And maybe we should spend, you know, take some time to think about what all our communities do have in common. And that's where you can start. We sure at least all believe in the importance of English and arithmetic. I mean, you can at least do your teaching.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.